The following is a presentation of Real Racing USA. This edition of Real Racing USA is joined in progress.
Off the fresh off the win this past weekend at DeSoto Super Speedway.
Absolutely. Won 9 out of 10 this year. So we're pretty happy with that kind of deal. We didn't really run for the points, but we just had a good season running down at DeSoto. So
9 out of 10 is pretty damn good.
Yeah, we got second in the Gulf Coast deal too, but we missed the race there in that deal. So we had a good season all in all.
I'll tell you what, though, in the open wheel modifieds this year, the guy winning all the money is Robbie Cooper.
Absolutely. He just got that rabbit in the hat, I guess. You know, he just everywhere he goes. I mean, he's talented, absolutely. But, you know, I'm not taking nothing away from them guys because they work hard. You know, he's right there on top of his game. But, he just being at the right place at the right time and being that good gives you those opportunities.
Wayne, you're down here basically to introduce your new business. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, me and my partner Joey, we opened up our own shop. It's something similar to Pletcher's when they were opened, and as everybody knows, they closed down, and we both worked there prior to that, worked with Dave back in the day and all. So Joey, he's a young guy, and he's got a lot of knowledge about machine work and doing head works. He's done a lot of mini stock stuff. He raced mini stocks, and we just both got together and decided we thought we could do this deal on our own. And, it's a little bit of a rough time, but we're hoping we put ourselves in a right financial situation, get started here with some low overhead and doing things a little, on a little lower key to start with, and see if we can kind of grow from there.
So what basically is your business? I mean, what do you specialize in?
Yeah, we sell race parts, and it's a machine shop. We do all kinds of automotive work, build race engines. We're going to be building our own stuff for the modifieds and anybody. We've already got some stuff out there in the Outlaws and street stock deals there with some guys we're going to be working with. And we got some guys in Bombers that we've helped a lot and done some changes to their stuff and helped them out a little bit. So we're just getting started with it and just trying to grow from there.
Are you guys going to concentrate on the lower tier classes or anything goes?
No, really. Anything that comes in the door, we're really going to do. We're kind of concentrating on whatever's going to run good. You know, I mean, modified stuff, street stock stuff, anybody that walks in the door, you know.
This is in South Florida now, right?
Yeah, right. This is actually the national show, yeah.
Yeah, right.
So, if people want to get a hold of your business or anything, how do they do that?
We got business cards and stuff we've been handing out. We didn't really get to get started with a grand opening like we'd like, so it's kind of been a word of mouth deal, which is kind of why we wanted to get on the show and spread the word a little bit more. But our phone number is 727-572-5097, and you can just call the shop there and deal with either me or Joe, and we'll take care of you.
Well, you know, you started the year out driving the super late model back to the modified. What's the plans for racing for next year?
Well, right now, with me and Joe and talking, we're going to try to see if we can build us a big motor and kind of do some of that fast car or whatever they're going to call it, modified series next year, and run some of those bigger tracks, which I've been to and won at, but, you know, we haven't been consistent at being able to stay doing that stuff. So that we're probably looking more along the lines of just kind of, you know, we're going to run the deal at DeSoto that they're having the 10 races there. So we're just going to, you know, basically stick with that, nothing more.
Now, you've watched racing this year. I mean, things have changed all over the place. The big news this past week was Ocala going to dirt. Now, I know you've ran Ocala quite a bit. How do you feel about that?
Well, I don't like it at all, to be honest with you, because I don't run dirt. So, I know dirt is cool, and everybody's, you know, you're a fan of one or the other, but I'm an asphalt guy, and that's pretty much what I like to stick at. But, I mean, it's just going to be one less track that we're going to get to go race at for me.
Another track down biting the dust. Yeah.
Well, as far as asphalt.
As far as asphalt, yeah.
It may flourish as a dirt track, which is hopefully why they're making that decision. But, you know, it just ain't no good for what we're going to be doing.
Ever thought of running dirt? You ever run dirt?
Yeah, no, I never run dirt, but I've thought about doing it. I just haven't made the full effort. I mean, I could have got on the dirt over there at East Bay with Jeff Matthews and his modifieds and stuff. Yeah, I probably still could if I call him today. You know, we've been friends. I just haven't been able to make the effort to get over there and actually do it and be able to put my head in the game and make an effort at doing well at it.
Them open wheel modifieds on dirt or some torquey little
I
bit.
I think you do good, man.
Yeah.
Could be trouble. Then I wouldn't want to go to asphalt, you know, then whatever.
Well, Patrick Williams, he races over at Volusia County Speedway Park or whatever, and he races asphalt and dirt.
Yeah, I'd do both if I had the opportunity, but I don't know. I guess I just never really made the extra effort.
Choquette?
Yeah.
Yeah, Choquette, too.
That kid's wild on dirt, man.
My boy JoJo, he'll be good on dirt with a mini stock.
Nah, there you go, I don't know about all that, man.
Now, would you... have you ever worked on anything for dirt drivers?
No, not directly. I mean, I've hung around Sport a little bit. I've been over there messing around with Bubba and them guys when they were racing a little bit. And, you know, and then, like I said, Matthews and them. But not really nothing I've ever – just more, nothing more than watching.
Yeah, it's some wild stuff. I mean, they pretty much go all out. Now, you know, the street stock and lower classes pretty much, you know, not as wild. But, I mean, you get up in those late models with the aluminum heads. And,
yeah, and you get big
crazy
money.
Crazy stuff,
yeah.
Big money.
I mean,
stuff.
The lettering jobs are, you know, $800 on these cars. You know, it's ridiculous. But, yeah. I mean, they look nice. But, I mean, it's just one – what do you like one or the other? You know, I mean, it's fun to watch, absolutely. We go over there for the Winter Nationals, try to see a couple nights, you know, so.
Wayne, what's the name of your business?
It's called Jefferson Irwin Racing.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Machine shop, service, and race parts.
Look, people are calling in already. So, pretty much going to stick with the modified next year. As far as your business goes, do you plan on pursuing it across the state or just staying local with it?
Well, you know, we talked about it right now. We're just trying to get started, so it's more so just, you know, whatever, you know, we're working locally as much as possible.
Area,
yeah, we're going to expand as much as we possibly can. You know, I mean, we're not looking to keep it just a little mom and pop, you know, buddy system, but we want to turn it into a legitimate business and be able to help some racers across the state and help some of these kids that are coming up through there and get their business and teach them, you know, stuff that we've learned along the way.
Right. Well, a big plus for you, though, is, I mean, your name is known all over the state. You've raced just about every asphalt track in the state, so that'll be a big plus for you.
Well, I think that was kind of part of how the deal went with Joey. I mean, he's got more of the machine knowledge and the engine building knowledge than I do, but he knew, you know, everybody knows my name. They didn't directly know his name, you know, just for the people he directly deals with. So I think the name together, you know, we can turn it into a you know, statewide, at least, you know, known name.
Right. It'd be nice if Sunshine opened back up. Well, you'd have it right there in your back door.
Yeah, we were just talking about that on the way down.
Yeah, the Sunshine Show, that was an amazing thing. I listened to that again last night. All the people that came to that show that you hadn't seen in years, and they're still there. They're still all out there.
The video is ready, too. I think that he is going to have it on the website. Bill Hunt is going to have the video on the website in a few days because they are ready.
Cool.
I've seen the final version. Matter of fact, there's a copy over there of the final version.
I take it with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, you got anything to add?
I don't know. About one more Joe there.
Yeah, we'll come back and talk. You'll think of some things later. But
okay.
Yeah. What's the name of the business again?
Jefferson Irwin Racing.
Jefferson Irwin Racing. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It'll come to you.
It's a good name.
It'll come to you.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's already rolling around at DeSoto.
Yeah, well, it's just one of those names, you know, we kind of threw together, but it was because we're, you know, we're partners in the deal, but it, you know, it's one of them names just going to have to kind of grow on you, you know, as time goes on, it, you know, the words will just be two words together.
With Fletcher's closing, I mean,
well,
you know,
I mean, that was the hole we were trying to, the void we were trying to fill. I mean, you know, most of our people that we're dealing with already are people that we dealt with there that we knew already that know us, you know, personally, so. It was we had a lot of people just looking for places to go, where to go. So, you know, it was like, maybe this is an opportunity. I mean, it ain't the best time in life to be trying to open a business or
right.
time of year, but if we can just get through here, you know, and get going, we'll be ready, rolling, everything will be set in our business for the start of the season, and I think we can kind of, you know, make it grow from there.
Actually, in that type of business, this is probably the better time of the year to open it up, going towards the end of the season, you know, getting ready for a new season to start.
Off-season, Tom's pretty good for freshening everybody's motors and stuff. They pull them out, we check them out, freshen them up, and they'll be ready for the start of the season. So, yeah, it's not that bad.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know what? I don't think there's a good time nor a bad time
to start a business.
Just do it. You know,
it's like having a kid, I said.
Yeah.
A good time for it. There ain't no never time. We're going to
tell you what, guys.
Just do
this
it.
Happens.
I'll tell you what, guys. A long time ago, in the 70s, they were racing the Governor's Cup in the 60s. Yeah, well, in the 70s or 60s.
60s.
Was that when Dumont won?
67.
We have Dumont Smith, who won that prestigious race, on the phone with us right now. Welcome to Real Racing USA, Dumont Smith.
Thank you.
How you doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Okay, now, did you rest your voice all day for us?
Didn't talk at all.
All right. Go ahead, Rick.
So you won the race in 1967. That was probably the when the race was probably hitting its most popular time at that time, right?
Right.
And what was it like to win that 67 race?
Oh, it was nice for me. I enjoyed it. I didn't have a car right before that, and I got a car to drive for that race. And set the fastest time trial and won it.
I was just going to ask him, well, did he dominate it? Well, I reckon so then, huh?
Oh, I had the best car there.
What kind of cars did you run then? What were the cars like?
That happened to be a 57 Chevy.
I knew he was going to say that. Anything before 70 was a 57 Chevy.
Yeah.
Now, the year before you finished fourth in the race, were you running the same car?
No, I was running our own car then. I finished third in that race, but I went up and told them that I thought I was fourth, and they put me back to fourth, and they later gave me third.
Oh, did they? Okay.
But I finally finished third.
Well, that was before video cameras and stuff, right?
Right, yeah.
Where's Satellite Beach?
Because a friend of mine bumped me and knocked the wheels out of line. I had to go in a pit and make it straighten the wheels up, and I come back out. I unlapped myself. Of a lap down, but I forgot about doing that. The boy that they give the fourth to, I told him he finished third. But he didn't, when he found out later that night.
So you were the third person to have your name on the trophy, I guess.
Right, uh-huh.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. Third.
What was did the race, I mean, I've seen you at New Smyrna. You're over there almost every year for the Governor's Cup. And, you know, you see what you know, the guys go through to try to win that thing today.
Yeah.
Was it like that then?
Yeah, we had a lot more cars then.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think it was 60-some cars that night.
Ooh. Yeah.
And Nerone would like to see that, huh?
Yeah, Don Nerone would probably like to see that today, wouldn't he?
Yeah, right.
Now, what did you have to do besides qualifying to get into the race, the guys who didn't qualify in the top 20?
They had to run a consolation race, and if you finished the first few of them, you got in a feature.
And it was a 200-lapper, right?
Right, uh-huh.
Yeah. There weren't very many big races like that around that back then, were there?
Not too many. West Palm Beach had every year a 100-lap race in West Palm Beach for New Year's race. But right. That was the biggest one. And then the short tracks, we run a lot of short tracks that had 200 laps. But not West Palm Beach. West Palm Beach was a half mile, like New Smyrna.
Now, Dumont, how many tracks did you race at during the course of a year?
Oh. All over the state.
Approximately how many, though?
Oh, probably 10.
Probably 10 tracks across the state?
I drove from all the way from New Smyrna to Miami. It was high there. West Palm Beach, Fort Pierce, Tampa, O'Galley Speedway, New Smyrna. I drove them all.
Now, were you just following the big races, or were you just were you points racing? What were you doing?
Well, I run the whole year most time. Then the end of the season, I over track at a championship race, and I just make sure and get them because that's the most money in them.
Right.
But I run the whole circuit, all the way from Miami to Tampa, St. Pete, all the way around.
It was a lot easier when it wasn't $3 a gallon for gas, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. But I'm a building contractor. See, I just did that for a hobby. I never went out to race for a living.
Right.
I wished I had a.
Yeah, you probably would have been pretty successful at it.
Speaking of that, Dumont.
Huh?
I said, speaking of that fact that you did it for a hobby.
Right.
Did y'all take it any less seriously than these guys who are doing it for a hobby today?
No. I went out to win them.
It ain't no hobby.
When I went to Tampa in 67, the the reporter said, how you figure you're going to do? You borrowed a car and you didn't have a car ready for this race. I said, I'd come over here to win. He said, well, what, you think you're going to win with all these cars? Yeah. I said, well, I'm hungrier than they are.
There you go.
So that's what I did. I set the fastest time trial and then I won.
Now, when did you finally retire from racing, Dumont?
I really retired in 77, but I drove a few times in East Smyrna for my son.
Uh-huh.
He was running the street stocks up there, and he had to go on vacation. And they, back at that time, they let anybody drive in the cars, the one who got the points.
Right.
So I drove for him a few times. I drove up until 78.
Oh, that's not bad. When did you start?
Oh, Lord. For you, sporting. And, I raced one race in 48.
You wasn't one of them moonshiners, was you?
Not really.
Not really?
So you won the Governor's Cup before I was even born.
I was raised in Carolina, so. But I raced most of the season 49 in the amateur division. And then in 50, I built a sportsman car run with the big boys, Turn, the Fox Brothers, and all them. But that was the first year I got in the big stuff, and I most of the time let somebody else drive it then.
What do you think of this racing today?
Well, money has ruined it to completely to me. Richard Childress is a cousin of mine, and he'll tell you that money has ruined it. Because right now, he spends more money to win a championship than he makes. Right. Except for the endorsements, that's where all the money's at.
Spend more than you make.
Huh?
You spend more than you make.
Oh, yeah.
Even at that level.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's spending a lot.
One time when Earnhardt won about the third time for him, they had cost him money to win that championship. But, you know, he gets the sponsors what pays him all the money.
Right.
As far as what you win, it's nothing compared to what it costs to run them cars.
Well, I mean, you know, you look down at the local levels now. People are spending more than they're winning.
Wayne, that's the way it is, right, Wayne?
That's absolutely the way it is. That's why the car counts are down, and that's why, you know, times are tough. It's just everybody's spending way more than they're winning.
My son was a good driver, but I say unless he got sponsorship, we never could stay in racing at the level they are in East Smyrna.
Right.
Motors cost $35,000,
$40,000. That's insane, too, isn't it?
Oh, completely.
What cost that? What did you say?
The motors.
The motors, yeah. Yeah.
What did your car run that you won? How much did you figure they had in the car that you won the 1967 Governor's Cup?
About $10,000.
$10,000.
Yeah.
Now, that was was that a ton of money back then?
Yeah.
Was that a lot of money in a car?
Well, not really. There's some of them boys from Miami that had that dope money. They cars
had a. Won't say any names.
We won't say any names
about that, but we know all about the chrome jack stands and who was getting her done.
But Gary Blue, one time, he and I drove the same car, but not at the same time. And I seen the money they were putting in cars, and I couldn't even believe what I was looking at.
Right.
I couldn't even believe what I was looking at.
That's the reason I got out of Miami and driving them boys down in Miami, because I was scared to death every time I'd leave down there, because they knew it. I know that they was in that dope business.
Time to head back north, right, Dumont?
Oh, yeah. Come up from Miami, same time with my pistol between my legs.
You know he ain't lying either, boy.
No,
unbelievable.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
What did a new car cost, a new car, a street car? What did a new street car cost in say, 67?
Oh, see.
About 15 or 20,000, or 15, 10, or,
probably
or
less, yeah.
5,000, 6,000?
I bought a new Pontiac in 65. I give $4,200 for it.
Brand new, right?
Brand new.
Yeah, because I got a 69 Camaro in 1970 for, I think, $1,800. It was 1 year old. You know,
yeah, huh?
About $1,800.
You couldn't buy a used one out of the junkyard for now.
You.
I bought my wife a new Cadillac in 78. I give $10,400 for it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Same car now is about $50,000.
Right.
Yeah.
I got it a good price. I got it from Jim Raffman, and he was a good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And so he gave me a good price on what he had in it.
But even back then, the purses, like in the 60s and 70s, when you were racing a lot, the purses weren't all that, were they?
Well, at the racetrack in 67, when I left there at night, I had $1,800 and some. And I got a lot more money out of it than that, because every race I appeared at next year, I got $175. So if I get two races a day, well, I'd make good money.
Right.
Who's the best promoter you ever seen?
Oh, I don't know. I was scared of most all of them the way they've done their business.
Yeah.
I'd say down in Hialeah,
they ain't changed.
Was the honestest people I've ever run against. When they told you they're going to pay you something, they paid you that. See, I used to get a lot of appearance money, and most of them would pay me real good, and part of them would promise to and then not give it to me. Gordon Solin Tapia was about the best, too.
Did you meet him and talk to him and deal with him?
Gordon?
Yeah.
He was a good friend of mine.
What was he like? Tell us about him.
Gordon was a good guy. As far as I know, he was honest. He was the only thing he's dishonest about. He would pay drivers to wreck you, then give you a lot of money to come there so you'd have a spectator to see them wreck you. Wrecking you. He had me wrecked one night in Tampa, and I'd kill me.
He had you wrecked and almost killed you?
Yeah. And
paid somebody.
My wife seen him pay the guy off, and then I like killed him.
Did he ever pay you to get anybody?
No, he knows I was against that kind of.
Yeah.
See, he wanted to unionize racings, and you win one night, and I win the next night, and everything like that. To start that racing organization, that's what they tried to do.
Right.
Well, that's why he went to wrestling, huh?
Well, he was the one that got that wrestling as crooked as it was. He's dead and gone now. I shouldn't talk about him.
Yeah, I just read a book about Gordon Solin, and it was really interesting, some of the things he did with racing itself.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, he was involved way back when they used to run the race around MacDill.
Yeah.
Were you ever involved with that?
Which was that?
When they had that big race at MacDill that ran around the outskirts of MacDill?
No, huh?
No.
Did you ever run the Snowball Derby?
No, I never did. It was too far away from me.
I gotcha. Yeah, okay.
I'd like to, but I never did.
Well, from the 40s to the 70s, I mean, appearance money.
Wow.
Yeah, what happened to that? Appearance money.
Yeah.
Well, I got a lot of appearance money.
Just to show up.
Yeah, just to show up.
Yeah, they kind of used to do that back in the day there. Right.
Yeah.
You know, that was a big thing to get.
Now if somebody does it, because every once in a while somebody will do that sort of thing.
Right.
They take grief for it if it gets out.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
No. We got to spend all our money to make an appearance. That's how it works now.
That's the way it works. Yeah.
We pay the owner $1,000 to make an appearance.
You'll be at the New Smyrna Speedway on Saturday night for the 42nd annual Governor's Cup, I'm assuming.
I hope to, if I'm all right and feeling good. I got a little trouble with my voice, and I'd have to watch about staying out of a night too much.
Right.
I'm a builder, and I got rebuilt a bunch of these houses, got tore up in the storms.
Right.
They all had mold in them.
Oh, yeah.
Mold in my lungs. Now I'm shutting down. My voice is shutting down now, but
yeah,
it'll come back.
Well, I'll tell you what. We will see you Saturday, and we look forward to it. And I'm sure we'll have a good time over there on Saturday at New Smyrna Speedway.
All right.
It was great talking to you, Dumont.
Thanks a lot, man.
Bye.
Bye. You never know.
You never know.
A good little blast from the past.
Them dope boys down in Miami.
Yeah. Burned them out. At least he was honest.
I drove home with a pistol between my legs many a night.
Just never know. Rick, we're going to take a quick break here, and then we're going to come back.
Okay.
And we're going to go Snowball Derby, Tim Bryant.
All right,
motor
man.
Up there, man. I think we can get everything working right here.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Dishonest Cable TV Hooker-Upper.
Mr. Dishonest Cable TV Hooker-Upper.
On any given day, somewhere between 9 and 4:30, you arrive ready to bring us the world. And for an extra 20, you'll bring us porn.
Naughty, naughty boy.
Hey, you've already got the van and the jumpsuit. Why not get into criminal activity?
Just a naughty boy.
After all, what are they going to do? Throw you in cable jail?
I don't think so.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light manhandler of the Scrambler, because isn't it about time someone hooked you up?
Mr. Designer's Cable TV hooker up.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and their new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman. On the web at thebrakeman.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane. Only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction race team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction. 813-478-8847.
All right, back to Real Racing USA.
Live.
Jefferson Irwin Racing in the house. How you guys doing tonight?
Woo, doing good.
Oh, man, that interview with Dumont Smith, that was awesome, wasn't it?
That's cool.
Yeah. Where are we going now, Jack?
I think we're going to go up to Five Flag Speedway and check in with Tim Bryant, the promoter up there, and talk about the Snowball Derby. Welcome to Real Racing USA again, Tim.
Hey, guys. My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
Cool. You know, we just got off the phone with what I lovingly call the old codger, who won the 67 Governor's Cup, Dumont Smith, and... so we figured that would be a good shift, and we'll come up your way and talk about the big race coming up at in December.
Well, we certainly are getting ready. It's the 40th annual. Talk about, you know, going back a few years. The late Tom Dawson started the Snowball Derby in 1968. So you know, we're about to celebrate the 40th anniversary of this race uninterrupted, which is almost unheard of in short track racing nowadays, and a lot of people have had a lot to do with this race through the years, and we're kind of steering the ship now. When I say we, I'm talking about the Bryant family, and we're just trying to continue the tradition.
There you go. I was just looking at the entry list for the Snowball and the Snowflake. Over 130 drivers pre-entered for them.
Yeah, and you know the of course Snowball has been a big super late model race for a long, long time, but our Alan Turner Snowflake 100, which is the night before the Derby, has turned into a monstrous event on its own. Of course, pro late model racing, or crate late model racing, as many people refer to it as, has really caught on in the South, and you know, we've got around 70 cars entered in that doggone thing.
Right. You know, the amazing thing about this race, and you just don't see it anymore in late model racing, is that you've got entries from all over the country.
Yeah, we do. Of course, a strong contingent of guys from your neck of the woods down there. And, you know, glad to see Mike Fritz back behind the wheel of a race car. We're looking forward to seeing Mike up here because he's run so well here before. And, of course, former Snowball Derby winner Wayne Anderson. Justin Drotty, who has had a good year up here with our Blizzard Series, Jeff Jaquette, who had an awesome year in the ASA Late Model Series and has shown that he certainly can find his way around Five Flags as well. Always good to have her. It wouldn't be a Snowball Derby without David Rogers. I think probably one of the top two or three sentimental favorites, you know, coming in here.
Then you have Benny Gordon from Pennsylvania.
Benny Gordon, yeah, he's yeah. Slated to drive a car for Tracy Goodson, a hometown guy. So that'll be a formidable team as well.
And Dave Mader III coming back.
Oh, yeah, former winner, is competitive every time. You know, Dave's one of those rare race car drivers you can find that can not turn a lap for 6 or 8 months and then hop behind the wheel of a strange car and drive it right to the front of the pack.
And Bobby Gill, he's on a roll again. He's showing the kids that there's still some fire in the old men.
Bobby Gill's always competitive, no matter what series he's running. But, you know, he's always been a contender at the Snowball Derby. And, of course, an unfortunate situation last year with Bobby. He finished the top three in the Snowball and then had a rules infraction at the end of the race. And
that was ugly.
A disqualification, which was unfortunate. So he may be coming back on a mission. You can look for him to be a contender.
Well, yeah, he had one. He had one several years back with Bickle too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the year they had the $100,000 bonus on the line. Those two guys
they duked out hard. Yeah,
line crashing, and it was an unbelievable amount of excitement and a lot of post race controversy as well. All of which we hope we don't have this year.
But the list is pretty cool. I mean, Gary St. Amand, that's
Kyle Busch.
That's what I say. Rowdy Busch is in there. He stirred up.
Yeah, Rowdy, he's scheduled to come in here next Tuesday and practice along with Stephen Wallace. The good thing about that is, I mean, here's a guy, you know, that's had a grueling, you know, 36-race Nextel Cup schedule along with a pretty aggressive Busch schedule and a lot of truck races as well. He's run his super late model a few times over the course of the summer, and you know, what's he going to do as soon as Homestead is over with, when the rest of them guys are breathing a sigh of relief? He's going to hop in the truck and drive to Pensacola and test his super late model for a race 2 weeks later.
Is anybody guaranteed into this race at this point?
We have two provisionals through our Blizzard Series. Of course, Scott Carlson ended up winning the Blizzard Series, actually by virtue of a tiebreaker system. He, at the end of our fifth and final race, was in a deadlock with Ryan Crane from Panama City. But because he had won two races, Scott ended up being named the Blizzard Series champion. So he and Ryan Crane have guaranteed starting spots. Now, the way those work is everybody in our Blizzard Series inside the top 10 actually has a shot at those. In other words, if Scott or Ryan, either one, qualify on time, in other words, if they're locked into the top 30 on Friday night's qualifying, then Justin Drotty would be the next one up, and so forth. Grant Enfinger is next, and Josh Hamner sits fifth, and right on down through the top 10. Actually, last year, Scott Carlson, who was sixth in the final Blizzard Series standings, ended up cashing in on one of those provisional spots to get into the Snowball Derby.
Yeah, I see David Pollin Jr. also in the heat there.
Yeah, Tampa, Florida driver.
Yeah.
Forward to having David up here.
So what's the schedule of events for the Snowball?
Well, of course, this Saturday we've got an open test date for all divisions. We should have a pit full of cars for our one and only open practice leading up to the Snowball. And, of course, there is some private testing going on, as I mentioned. On Thursday, the 29th of November, it all kicks off. We've got our Snowball Derby for our Bomber Division. Starting something new this year. We're qualifying those guys through a series of qualifying races as opposed to time trials. We're doing the same thing with our Sportsman Division, and we'll have their qualifying races on Thursday night, locking the top 24 into Friday night's feature. The Bomber race, as I said, runs on Thursday night. Then on Friday night, probably the most dramatic moment of the whole weekend is pole position qualifying for the Snowball Derby. As I say, we'll lock in the top 30 cars in time trials. Then we'll have our Sportsman feature and a 75-lap Super Stock event going on Friday night. And then we shift to Saturday. We have Open Wheel Modifieds come in. That was a very popular race last year in the Snowball program. We had 50-plus Modifieds come in. So we'll have those guys in on Saturday. They'll run a 75-lapper to close out Saturday night. The rest of the day will be filled with Snowflake qualifying, Snowball Derby qualifying races for the non-qualified guys. We'll take all the non-qualifiers from Friday's time trials, split them into two qualifying races, and take the top three out of each one of those. And we'll also do the same exact thing with our Snowflake non-qualifiers. Again, we're locking in 30 into the Snowflake. Everybody else will be split into two qualifying races, and we'll take the top three out of those. And then, of course, the Alan Turner Snowflake 100 goes off on Saturday night. This year, we've extended it to 100 green flag laps of racing, and we've increased the purse. It's paying $7,000 a win. So, one of the top pro late model races in this part of the country. And then, of course, on Sundays, what it all leads up to, it'll be the 40th running of the Snowball Derby, 300 laps. It should be an awesome event.
No doubt about it. We got with us right now, helping us co-host tonight, Rocket Man Wayne Jefferson. He's a modified driver. What do you think, Wayne? You going to make the trek?
No, I don't think so right now. We were just talking about that. You know, we run that spec motor deal or whatever, that stock Gulf Coast motor, and I just don't think we have enough. We probably could run good after 25 laps in the race, probably be the best deal, but trying to get in with them guys with, you know, the open motor, qualifying 50 cars, you know, if there wasn't enough cars showing up, be one thing, but I don't know. But I talked to little Johnny there from our local track, DeSoto, and he said he's going up there. So
John Sapricone Jr.
He's thinking about coming up that way to run that deal too. So
well, I tell you what, you know, we used to run the modifieds on a regular basis here, Wayne, like all classes of racing, you know, they cycle and the popularity kind of decreased, and so we ended up dropping that class. Well, they're kind of on the comeback trail. We always like to include them into the Snowball program, so by not having a local division, that's how we come up with such a broad set of rules for the Derby, you know, over the last few years, so that guys could come from just about anywhere and run. But open-wheel modified racing has made a big comeback in our area, so we're looking at probably tightening up our rules on that and running those cars more often next year.
Let's put the reason why it's on the comeback in a bottle and sell it. why is it on a comeback up there, man?
You know, that's a good question. I really don't know. We're actually toying with the idea of maybe, you know, putting the open wheel modifieds on one of the crate motor options to try to get the engine cost down. As Wayne mentioned, these open motors in these cars just got so expensive. I mean, guys were, you know, virtually running super late model engines in these open wheel modifieds, and of course, you know, on our track, it's not a big advantage. That's the reason we don't really have any engine rules, because you could bring the best motor in the state up here and not really have an advantage over a guy that's 30, 40 horsepower less than you, because we run on an 8-inch tire. We've got a pretty abrasive racetrack, so there's just no way you can get all that power to the ground. So
you'd wear out the tires in two laps, huh?
Yeah, and that's the deal. It's just like we were saying, you know, when you in a situation where you got to qualify like that and you got a lot of cars and you got to make a field, you know, we're down probably, you know, 150, 200 horse more than them guys as far as what we're on. And like I said, we'd probably be the fastest thing there 30 laps in. But unfortunately, trying to out-qualify 50 open motors is probably not going to happen. So, you know, we talked about it. I mean, the best thing to do be up there is to go up there with an open motor and qualify and then switch the motor and start in the rear. And you know, you probably could have a good shot at winning the race.
Set off sailing.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tim.
That's all I was going to say. Was he's exactly right. I mean, the open motors do probably have a little bit of an advantage just for qualifying, and that's about it.
Yeah, amazing. Now, in the Snowball, what's the pitting deal? They
It's just open pits anytime you want to come in?
We have a, of course, we have a tire limit. It's a three pit stop race. I mean, there's three extra sets of tires in the pits when the race starts, and certainly guys can use them at our racetrack. At last year's Snowball, we finished the race with a 70 lap green flag run, so a lot of guys had extra tires in the pits that they never got the opportunity to put on, but gosh knows they sure wanted them at the end. But one of the things that our fans like here, it's the one time a year that we have, you know, hot, wide-open pit stops. I mean, we allow four-tire stops and so forth, and, you know, the jury's kind of out on that. We're actually toying with the idea of maybe modifying that in the future to make it, you know, only two tires at a time, because what we're seeing is there's actually quite a few teams that bring in NASCAR pit crews for this race. But, you know, although that makes it expensive for some of the competitors, it's something that the fans really like to see. So, you know, that's kind of a catch-22.
So if they come in under caution, you know, to change tires, they got to get out there ahead of the field, or do they go a lap down if they don't get back out?
Oh, absolutely. We of course use electronic scoring on this race, so it's scored just like a NASCAR race.
Gotcha.
They can lose a lap on pit road. Of course, half mile track, pace car runs 35 miles an hour. They don't have a lot of time. But last year, for instance, Stephen Wallace started the race by virtue of a past champion's provisional, and
ended up running second or something. Yeah.
I should have mentioned when I was talking about those two guaranteed spots, the third provisional goes to the most recent Snowball Derby winner, and that is all of our provisionals that we have. But anyway, Stephen started on the rear of the field, and he was passing some cars, but every time there was a caution and around a pit stop, he was gaining like 8 or 9 spots coming off the pits. His pit crew just basically got him to the front of the pack, and ultimately he finished second in the race.
Right,
yeah, that's important.
That's real important.
In a situation like that where you got a lot of laps like that, you know, you got a lot of amateur crews out there, I mean, it can be a big benefit, like you said, every time. He didn't need to pass 8 race cars on the track in the 50-lap run, you know. All he needed to do was hang out, get a few that were off a little, and then wait on to get in the pits, and you get 8 or 10 more, like you said, and then get race when he gets to the front.
Well, exactly. The other thing, like Tim was saying, there's a lot of rental crews that are coming in as far as pit crews.
Yeah.
But you got Stephen Wallace who's working with his crew.
Right.
You know,
right.
They know the kid.
I commend Tim. You know, he says they're already on top of that. You know, you want it because it's a fan-based deal, but at the same time, you got to keep the cost down for the competitors or you're not going to have 68 cars showing up.
Well, you know, and the other thing about last year's race, Tim, and as far as the media, you know, the race was great and the build-up and everything was great, but what we really saw a lot of in the media was how much fan attention last year's race got.
Huge.
Well, I mean, you know, fortunately our event has turned into a kind of a spectacle in our area. In fact, it's the largest sporting event going on in Northwest Florida now. We used to have a PGA senior tour event here, but it went away for lack of sponsorship, so that still kind of left the Snowball Derby as the largest sporting event in our part of the country. And we actually get a lot of folks that are, they may be SEC football fans, or, you know, they may be NFL fans or baseball fans, whatever. They all, you know, manage to find enough interest in the spectacle of the Snowball Derby to come out once a year. So it's really turned into a lot of fun. I mean, we have a parking lot that's full of campers, and we've got, you know, we're going down the street to the Interstate Fairgrounds with the spillover. We're setting up a camper city down there because we just don't have enough room for them here. So it's really turned into a lot of fun, you know, with the racing being the highlight, of course, but it's just a fun event for people to attend.
Yeah, that's really awesome, too. That's awesome. That's a good... It's good to see you guys, your family, you know, taking back over and keeping that deal going. That's just, it, to me, I've never gotten a race hit. I've run super late models, but we just never made it to the Snowball. Hopefully one day I still will, whether it's in the modified or late model or whatever. But it's just awesome to keep that deal. You know, I got a son, and I hope he still gets to see it, you know. So it's awesome.
Well, the race has certainly had a lot of history, you know. Long before we took over the track, as I said, it had turned into a traditional event. But if you go through and look at some of the names of the drivers that have been here, the list of non-winners is far more impressive than the list of winners.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. That's definitely an impressive list of people to look at over the years. I mean, we've been there and seen You know, I went there and watched a bunch of times. I mean, people like, you know, Tammy Joe Kirk went racing back then days. I mean, it was just, it was all, there's been Red Farmer and them guys. It's just awesome to see them people racing back then.
Well, we had a story come up on Speed 51 and was on our website and has been circulated some other areas. And I don't know if you guys got a copy of the story or not, but it's real interesting. And in a condensed version, it was a story about Dave Mader and Junior Niedecken and David Rogers, who are all, I think, going to run their 25th Snowball Derby this year. Of course, Mader's the only one of that group that's won one. He won it in, I believe, 1979. But David Rogers was quoted in that article, and I just thought this was a priceless statement. He said, yeah, racing sure has changed a lot. He says, used to be at the end of the day, you know, everybody'd kind of go out. The guys would all go out and maybe have a beer together. But he says, nowadays, at the end of the day, most of the drivers have to go home with their parents.
Yeah, right.
They ain't allowed to drink.
Yeah, most of them aren't allowed to drive on the road.
Yeah. You're right about that.
We have heard him say that before.
Yeah. That's true. Right. So beyond the Snowball Derby, what's the plans for Pensacola next year?
Well, we're trying to formulate our 2008 schedule now. We thought we was going to have a little break between our Night of Champions back October 14th and trying to start preparations for the Snowball, but we really didn't. We come in the following Monday and kind of hit the ground running. So I'm a little behind on getting our 08 schedule together. We're going to continue on with our Blizzard series for the super late models. We'll probably step up our pro late model racing program next year with a couple of special events for those. As far as any tour races, we're not booked with anybody just yet, but it may happen. But again, the 08 season will be here before we know it, and of course we'll all be gearing up in a roundabout way to the 41st Snowball Derby come next December.
All right, man. Well, Tim, it was great talking to you again. Anytime you need anything, we're right here. You got any news coming out about any special things coming up with the Snowball, let us know, and we'll get you right on the show.
Okay. Hey, I appreciate talking to you guys.
Thanks, Tim.
We're going to try to book a good modified race for you to come up and run with us.
All right, awesome. I can't wait.
There you go, brother.
All right.
All right. Tim Bryant, Fly Flag Speedway. You know, I've never been to a Snowball.
They're awesome. They're an awesome race for sure. I mean, the Governor's Cup is got to be about the best one. But if there's something better, it's the Snowball Derby for sure. Just because of the names and the
names,
people, the history of it. I mean, the Governor's Cup's there, but there's just a little bit more with the Snowball. It's just a bigger deal. I mean, if I had to run one race, if I had to pick one race, I would be the Snowball Derby.
Well, yeah, because the Governor's Cup is really, really a Florida.
Right, and the difference too is that like the Governor's Cup is more of our guys.
Right,
we don't get a lot of guys from somewhere else. You know, you can go over there and make the Governor's Cup and not be as not be as good as you need to be. But you go to the Snowball Derby, you better bring everything you got and anything else you can find because you need it all to get in the show. Just to get in the show.
61 cars entered, right? Top 30 are booked, are locked in from qualifying. You got two Conti races. 30 cars trying for three spots.
Yeah. And where are you at when you're starting 28th in that?
Yeah, right.
I mean, what I'm saying? You better enjoy the race because, that's it. That's your race for the weekend.
You better hope 20 cars crash in front.
And you don't have to be a bad driver or a poor driver, under finance team. You don't got to be any of that to be one of those cars.
Yeah, last week I asked Jeff Choquette why he didn't, because he didn't go to Nashville,
for the
final.
American,
that deal. He didn't go, and he went down to race some dirt, and I asked him the why, and the why was just what you just said. Is he said you just can't go to Nashville without being fully prepared, and if that's true at Nashville, it's doubly true at the Snowball.
And I've been in Nashville too with them guys. I've been to the All-American 400 with Copeland and some of them guys back in the day, and it's same thing. Yeah. When they show up, I mean, it's like a little mini NASCAR race.
It's game on.
Yeah, and you better have it. You better have the equipment, the people, the talent, everything, the money. You better have it all, and then you still ain't guaranteed anything.
Yeah, I mean, so. The Snowball Derby is a true all-star super late model race.
Yeah, absolutely. The names have been in that are amazing.
You go back and you look at Rusty Wallace and Darrell Waltrip, and the list just goes on and on and on. I forgot to ask him how much it costs, though.
Yeah, I know. I talked to a few drivers over the times, over a few years, and I mean, it used to be around 8 or 10 grand, but I think it's up there is around 15 grand now. You better be ready to at least shell out
Well, three sets for of tires. Weekend.
Yeah, well, and just everything. The fuel bill for be there. You're there three, four days of motel room, right. And dinners, and coolers, and, you know, everything.
It's and just, ain't you just your four no, guys that go to no, the track with you on no, Saturday night
no,
either.
No, and then that same thing, all the entry fees of all the people for three, 4 nights of doing it, you know, in and out of China. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, that's three sets of tires for the race.
Right, and, I mean, there's probably 15 sets of tires to practice on. You know, them guys that can spend the money do it, you know what I mean? And just, I mean, and there's so many other little things we're not even mentioning, just little things. I mean, you know, brake fluid, seals, parts, all this stuff that you just go through that you don't even think about. You
right,
know?
And the thing I've heard about Pensacola is probably the most abrasive track in the United States compared to Hickory Motor Speedway.
What's the name of that race shop down there in that new race shop again?
Jefferson
Irwin Racing.
And how you get in touch with you guys again?
You just give us a call, 727-572-5097.
There you go,
that's
man.
That's what you need to do.
And if you want to get ready for the Snowball Derby, these guys will get you there.
Just give us a call.
There you go, man.
No doubt.
What will be the main deal you guys think during 2008? What do you think your main core business is going to be?
Well, that's definitely going to be machine work. You know, I think we're going to do a lot more machine work.
What do you mean?
Well, we do stock automotive machine work for everyday, you know, automotive repair around the area, and then we also do race engines for the local guys and stuff like that. So, you know, we're going to do a lot of that. We're going to sell a lot of race parts. We have been selling a lot of race parts.
You mean you can make my Riviera go faster?
Well, we could give it a shot, I can tell you that much. We can make it not smoke.
Well, it don't smoke. Yeah. I got what you mean, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so.
You don't need to go any damn faster. You already got a ticket this year.
You already got a ticket for the year you're out.
I got a couple.
Yeah, going to North Carolina.
Yeah, nice. Jack Leadfoot Smith.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here, and I think we're going to come back with, in a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Steve Lewis, the creator, the guru of the performance racing industry. Whole deal, man. Yeah.
No doubt. All right.
Guru.
Yeah.
Take us out,
Jack. The other side.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet Inventor.
Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet Inventor.
You've given us the real American dream. A tray, 15 feet of food, and a little sign that says, Go nuts, buddy.
Well, pinch me, I'm dreaming.
Pushing side dish innovation to its limits, you offer creamed everything and 400 flavors of gelatin.
Feed it frenzy.
If there's beef, you'll chip it. If there's chicken, you'll fry it. And if there's gravy, well, then everything's going to be okay.
Thank God for the gravy.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, buffet boy. You know the way to a man's heart and a few hundred tasty ways to challenge it.
Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Fort Collins, Colorado.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction, 813-478-8847.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the Brakeman. The Brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the Brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and a new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman. On the web at thebrakeman.com.
Are you ready to win? If so, it's time to move up to 5-Star Race Car Bodies. 5-Star Race Car Bodies designs and manufactures the highest quality race car body components. Short tracks, drag strips, road courses, and even in the desert, 5-Star has one driving passion: to help you win. 5-Star Race Bodies designs and manufactures for NASCAR, Grand Am, NHRA, IHRA, SCCA, Short Track Asphalt, Short Track Dirt, USAC, USAR, Hooters Pro Cup, and the ASA Late Model Series. Find out more today, 5starbodies.com.
PowerMaster is your ASA Series sponsor for the XS Power Batteries. PowerMaster is pleased to announce the introduction of the XS Power Series of batteries. XX Power Batteries for racing applications and batteries for your car audio application. 12-volt batteries for street machines, street rods, off-road vehicles, and even motorcycles. XS Power Batteries means 30% more power and no battery spilling. PowerMaster also carries your starters and alternators. Visit us on the web at www.powermastermotorsports.com.
The O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA. Meet the racers of America's most exciting short track racing series every Wednesday night from 8 p.m. until 9 p.m. From the Milwaukee Mile to Bristol Motor Speedway, Five Flags in Nashville, the ASA is the racing series where young talent meets wily veterans in extreme short track competition. O'Reilly is America's auto parts store, and the ASA is America's premier late model series. O'Reilly Auto Parts ASA Fast Lane gets you close to the action and behind the scenes with the real stories from the drivers themselves. The O'Reilly ASA Fast Lane, only on Real Racing USA.
We are back with Real Racing USA. Jack playing more music?
No, that was just, you know, you just preempted the prompt.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, while we were waiting for the phone call, we were talking about your little trip up there to the All Harley Drags.
Oh yeah, that was cool, man. That's cool.
Some crazy stuff there. You know, Wayne
at Rockingham.
These guys, I mean, we got some real balls to the walls guys running stock cars, man. But these guys,
Wayne, I got to tell you, and I've said this a few times, man. I'll tell you,
balls ain't to the wall. Somewhere else.
We have. I don't know where they're at.
On the back of that seat.
for me personally, we've interviewed, you know, in the last 10 years, just, I mean, a thousand of people, and of all kinds, you know, of racing and motorsports, I ain't never run across anybody as crazy as these guys.
And then we get into talking to them. I mean, and some of them are 60 years old. 70 years old.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Getting ready for next season because they broke their back when they fell off the bike.
Motorcycle.
You know, I just
70 years old, I'll be looking for the couch.
And then what was that what the hell was that electric bike
the Killicycle.
Killicycle.
The Killicycle. The fastest electric powered motorcycle on the planet. To killcycle.com.
That's going to be a good bracket racing bike there, huh? it probably goes the same speed every single time.
These guys are like serious engineering like people and
gurus.
Yeah, gurus.
180 miles an hour.
Electric. Quietly, completely soundless.
He did the. Yeah, that's all you hear. That's all he does, the burnout.
And they're working. They're working on, and it's all about, of course, funding and things like that, but they are working on the car.
Yeah, well,
the drag car.
There are actually a couple of those cars out there.
Coming up here in a few weeks on Real Racing USA Live on Tuesday night, we're going to have some guys who do the they're part of this whole robot race car deal, and you know, they have these big races where they actually race for big money prizes,
right?
But it's all scientific stuff, and it's about like robot the robots. Okay, well, they have robot racing deals, race cars that are robotic
with no drivers.
Yeah, and they go really fast. And these guys, and the whole point is like we're going to have one of these guys on that won this year. He's an engineer from Pennsylvania.
Put the car in the wall, and not worry about
one
it.
One of the big,
yeah. No, yeah. Put him in the wall. I'm putting him in the wall.
When it comes to me, I'm putting him in the wall.
Yeah, I'm Warren Wallace.
there's this big prize at the end of this whole deal that the big, like their Daytona deal, is whoever can get to the moon first with one of these things, put the car on the moon, and actually have this race. I mean, for real. This is for real deal, man. It's no
Jack, serious?
I'm totally serious. I listened to this guy.
You can go watch him launch it and everything. And,
but anyway, they race these robotic race cars very fast. And
race cars. Unbelievable.
Well, that'd be awesome.
We're going to race hovercraft.
So what was it that prompted you guys to decide to do this adventure, man, with what's the name of that business again?
Jefferson Irwin Racing.
Jefferson Irwin
Racing. We got a takeoff of our buddy of ours, Jack Smith, at Karnak.com. We've seen how successful he was.
Sitting in the towers.
Yeah, up here on the 20th floor of the Karnak Tower.
Karnak Tower where Jack lives.
funny guys. So besides doing what you were talking about, doing motor...
Machine work.
Yeah. So what do you do, like the 14-year-old kid comes over with his dad with the late model, and he wants to solicit you guys to help him make this all work. What do you do?
That's absolutely our game right there. However they want to do it, we can build race engines. We'll do technical support. We'll go to the racetrack with them. We'll babysit them, do whatever it is they need, and help them in every way that they need, whether it be, you know, driver or, you know, building their motor, learning about their motor, setting up their race cars, learning about their race cars, safety, everything. However, you know, he could come to us with no knowledge, and we would help him try to turn into what would be, amateur to professional race team or driver.
You know, you and I have talked many times after the races, and we discussed about how many people come up to you during the course of a day at the races. You know, how do I do this? How can I do this? Well, now it's a business.
Yeah. Well, and I look at it a little bit differently, but in the same aspect, I don't, because I was always help anybody that I could, and I felt good about doing that. You know, it's hard to be a competitor and then try to step on the other side and be, you know, a businessman about it and give them an answer that is going to be correct for their situation, and then at the same time it may not be something that I would do as a driver. So, you know, it's hard to find, you know, to play to both sides like that, but I try to give people the answer, the right answer, but at the same time an explanation as to that may or may not benefit them in their aspect, you know, what they're doing. So I don't want to say that I necessarily would give them information that just pertains to them that they need to hear, but I would want them to understand that, you know, you have to take things in stages, and depending on what their issue is, you know, you need to do this or try that, or if that don't work, let's do this, you know, and do some different things to come up with the answer they're looking for.
You both have a lot of experience working in speed shops and such. Did you ever think when you were slinging dirt in Sunshine Speedway's parking lot that you'd be where you are right now?
Absolutely not. And I mean, you know, there's probably not anybody that ever, you know, would think it that way as far as trying to say it back then. You know, back then it was just wanting to get in it and do it. And when I was a street stock driver, I was probably more intense than I am now about it, because it was new to me. It was what I'd been wanting to do. I might as well have been a NASCAR driver when I was driving street stock. In my eyes, it didn't matter. And I see that in a lot of people, and I respect that, because, I'm not going to do anything else. So this is my NASCAR. This is my world. This is what we do. So, you know, I know Joe can say the same for running the mini stock. You know, he didn't have as much success as he liked, but he didn't get to do it as much, and he always had to do it on his own and do it on his own money and his own time. And in his world, he did an awesome job at it. You know?
Yeah, it was everything, you know, everything you ever wanted to do. You know, there was you woke up, you thought about it, and you went to sleep thinking about it. And while you were sleeping, you thought about it, you know. So it was our world, and that was the only thing, you know, around.
Yeah, that's like my thing. For 3 years, I ran demolition derbies and school buses and anything crazy, I'd do it. But that was my thing. That's
right.
What I wanted to do.
Right, the
and I mean, you're exactly right. You woke up thinking about it. You woke up thinking, how am I pulling the frame out on that car? You know, I got to go in a derby.
I got to go today. Right. Who do I got to call? Where do I got to go? What do I got to get?
I need this. I need that. You know, and who's going to pay my entry fee? Let's see. Right. I ain't got enough money, so I got to call this guy. Yeah,
it wasn't about where we're going to eat tonight or where we got grocery money. Yeah,
No.
We're going to figure out where we got to get the trailer to borrow that we can go down and get my car and get that thing over to my buddy's shop and get it pulled out so I can get it back down there and get it beat out, you know. And that's all it was, you know. That's all you thought about.
The people that are, you know, are successful at what they do, because, I mean, I was always in top three every time I whatever I did. I mean, I won the first ever school bus race at New Smyrna Speedway. But your intensity and how much you really love it and how much it drives you, you can tell the people up in the front from the people in the back.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no doubt about it. But let me ask you this. Did you ever get to a point where you go, I'm tired of this? I am tired of this.
No.
Never?
No. Even on my worst day, I'm not tired of it. I might say it. I know I've been done. And my wife's probably laughing if she's listening, saying, you know, I've had to hear it 100 times. You're quitting. Blah, blah, blah. I'm done. I'm sick of this, you know. But I guess I have to say I said it, but I didn't absolutely mean it in any way. And she laughed and used to say the same thing, you know.
It's called Benton.
Yeah, don't even bother wasting your breath saying it, because you know.
Don't
you
say it to me. Say it to somebody.
I'm only done from 2 hours past the race on Saturday night, but Sunday morning when I wake up, it's back to the shop. We'll figure out how I'm gonna fix it. I'm getting them. I'm going back after it. Right, right. You know. So it's just how it is. That's just who you are when you're that way.
Yeah. Once it's in your
blood, it doesn't have to be racing. You know, it could be anything in your life, but just to be that passionate about something is what it has a lot to do with the success you have at it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then you look at a guy like Yoho. He just simply loves it. From day one, this guy has loved it.
Yep. And you know, something unique about him is, I mean, you know, a lot of us, we laugh about him. You know, he's a good guy. He's a businessman. He's a professional. He is a showman. Absolutely.
No doubt.
It doesn't matter what it is based on. He's putting on a show. And that's what we do. That's what is entertaining. We are entertainment, like we talked about. And that's what the fans want to see. Whether it's goofy, stupid, professional or not, it's entertainment. And that's what, you know, he has a lot of success at that part of it.
Yeah, and that, you know, to me, that's a lot of what a lot of tracks forget about, that this is entertainment. Like Dumont Smith was telling us about Gordon Solie, you know. Paid a guy to take me out and damn near killed me. Well, you know what? I guarantee you 200 people came back the next week to see if Dumont was going to get that guy.
Yes.
I remember when I used to go down to Saramana, and I mean, it was crazy like that. You know, if the races got boring, you turn around and watch the fights behind you. You know, and, I mean, that was racing. That was the way you did it, you know.
Absolutely.
And, but the place was packed all the time, and you sometimes sometimes make those rivalries.
Right.
You know, you do.
And I've thought about, you know, and talked about some guys doing that. You know, let's put on a little bit of a show out there and make it a little more dramatic while we're out there than it really has to be. You know, I mean, we can butt heads out there, you know, like we're going to throw down and get into each other, do whatever. But, you know, we're still going to have a beer, you know, hang out after the race. That's fine. But for the fans part of it, you know, that's what it is. That's the entertainment part of it.
Exactly. We'll get back to that in a minute. Jack?
Speaking of dramatic, we got a very dramatic show coming up in Florida again this year. And it's called the PRI Show. And we have Steve Lewis, who's the creator and the promoter of this whole big event that happens every year in Florida these days. Welcome to Real Racing USA, Steve.
Well, I'm glad to be on with you guys. I know that everybody down there in Florida listens to you guys, and it's a pleasure to be with you here on a what kind of weather are you having down there, anyway?
Well, down here, we're a little bit in South Florida. It's 75, 80 degrees.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's a nice day.
Yeah, it's a nice day. We've had a little bit of a cold snap. I think it got down to 55 during the week last week.
But we're getting ready to come to Florida.
Yeah.
There you go.
And now, when is the event? And give us a little bit of the backdrop here.
Excuse me, I just didn't quite hear. What was the question?
Well, tell us, when is the event this year, and
we have actually two events in Florida. The event that for the business aspect of racing is our 20th annual Performance Racing Industry Trade Show that's going to be held December 6th through 8th at the Orlando Convention Center there. That's going on 6th, 7th, and 8th. Okay, now, for that, it's really basically for the racing business people, so you have to be in business to come to that show. But on Friday night at Orlando Speed World, we're going to have our third annual Mopar PRI Sprint Midget Classic presented by DHL race, which will be an interesting event because we'll have Legend Cars, Focus, Sprint Cars, and Midgets, and we got a deal where if whoever wins the Sprint Car race is going to start in the back of the Midget race, and if they can win both, they can take home the Crane Cam's $50,000 bonus award. So there's a lot of money up for grabs. In fact, the total purse this year exceeds $135,000.
And last year, you had over 8,000 people show up, I believe.
We did, all at once. And this year, about was interesting, about, I'd say, a little over 1,000 of that 8,000, they came in shuttle buses from the convention center. As the show closed there at 6 o'clock, they hopped on the nice big shuttle, and we had complimentary Budweisers there for them so they could take the nice 25, 30-minute ride out to Orlando SpeedWorld, have a little bit of refreshment, and then go watch them racing.
You know, there's a lot of big racing events as far as racing itself, but there's nothing that compares to the event. I went. I wasn't able to go last year, but the year before at the Orlando Convention Center, Bill Green and I spent the day there, and there's just it's beyond belief.
It's even gotten more beyond belief than your visit a couple years ago. We're now, we've just sold a little over 4,400 booths. So we're using about 890,000 square feet of the million square feet that's available. And there's 1,420 exhibitors. So there's a lot to see there. It takes a guy that's in business that has a speed shop. Like, they'll come in there and they'll spend all 3 days going up and down the aisles, and they'll see, you know, new products and different things that they can put into their store to sell to their customers. So it's, and then we have people coming from all around the world. We have a strong contingent coming up from Mexico, South America, Central Europe, Japan, Australia, New Zealand. I mean, everyone comes from around the world to come to this deal and buy stuff.
So how did this whole deal get started, Steve?
Well, we had we're in our 20th year, and 20 years ago, I got the idea that because we produce trade shows for other niche markets. We produce a trade show for the surfing industry, and we produce a trade show for the outdoor backpacking, camping, hiking, mountaineering industry. And because I raced as a hobby, I saw some similarities in the racing industry, that there was actually some legitimate distribution units developing where people were going to freestanding stores to buy their shock absorbers or their fuel, and manufacturers wanted to get access to these outlets, and a magazine and a trade show, a trade magazine and a trade show is a logical step for that to happen. Did I think that we'd ever get to where we could use a million square feet? No. Did I think that we would ever get the show to where 40,000 people would come? No. I just wanted to put together a nice little event that what I felt would be, would mirror the image of the market and do a good job for the people in the market. And we did that in Louisville. We had, I think, around 275 booths the very first show at the Commonwealth Convention Center, and we might have had 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 in attendance. But you could see that it would work. The chemistry was working because the people that came, they saw the products available, and they made purchase decisions. And from that humble beginning, it grew to what it is now.
Did the has the Florida moved from up north to a southern venue like Orlando?
Well, it's helped in a couple of ways. The main, we were kind of landlocked there. We had used every crack and crevice of the Indiana Convention Center there in Indianapolis. We had people in closets. I wasn't even trying to find, there was just one elevator. We were trying to figure out how to stick a booth in there, and we just got to the point where we had no more space, and we had two issues. One, there were people inside the hall that wanted to expand, and then there were people outside the hall that were banging on the door to get in. And they were 6 or 7 years away from their expansion program, so we had to make a move. And there were two logical venues. One is the Atlanta World Congress Center, and then the Orlando Convention Center. And we felt the facility at Orlando was probably a notch or two better for us. And we felt that the community of Orlando would like this event and help us in with the hotels, which they've done. And so as a result, I think the show grew considerably after the move, because there was that pent-up, it was like a pressure cooker. You know, we released the pressure, and people were able to expand, and we sold 200 more companies the first year there. There was that many people wanting to get in. So I think now, after the, this will be our third year there, I think people see that Orlando will be the place for the show to be for the future, for many years to come.
Now, for somebody who owns a racing business, but they're not going to put a booth, or, you know, they're not going to go that big, can they go to the event?
If you're a business, like, I mean, if you're reselling or have a store or trackside sales or an engine builder or building cars or, you know, doing, let's have a little carburetor rebuild business or whatever it is, as long as it's something to do with racing and you have a business card or some sort of identification that you're involved in the industry, because we actually have a qualifying system. We run you through a little filtering system, and then you get your credential and you go into the show. We're not set up for a consumer, the guy off the street. We're just not set up to handle him because the exhibitors are expecting us to kind of, what's the word, monitor the attendance so that the people in the aisleways are more from the resale category. Every major race team, like Hendrick, brings probably 34 people, Childress, 40 or 50 people. All those guys come in because they buy in major quantities and they have purchase orders that are quite extensive, you know, in terms of value. So, you know, we cater to the big teams and they're all there. And we cater to the smaller business, racing business units, trackside sales operator. Dave Steele, you know, who
sure
drives sprint cars, he just started a new little business called Steele Performance down there in Tampa, Florida. So he's going to come to the show this year with his attendee buyer hat on, because he's going to go look around and look at products that he can put into his unit, his little store down there. And so that's the type of guy that we really want.
Yeah, we have a couple of those guys right here with us in the studio tonight who just started a business just like what you're talking about.
Oh, have they registered for the show yet?
Yes, sir. We've already got our credentials, and we're looking forward to it.
All right, cool.
There'll be no lines for you.
No, we're in the door.
Okay, be sure to go to breakfast.
Yes, we are on it.
Yeah, we're on that for sure.
We're there, and we're on the Bud Bus.
Yeah, okay. Don't lose your keys in the place.
No, don't do that.
Don't lose your friend in the place.
On Thursday night, which is the first night of the show, at 6 o'clock, our good friends from Budweiser are bringing in 20,000 cans of Budweiser, and we're going to have them a clever way of distributing the 20,000 cans in that south lobby. And then after that, the Stars of Karting, they're going to have a go-kart race in the parking lot. They'll have two different races. They'll have their regular Stars drivers in a tag class, and then they're going to have what they call the Masters All-Star Race. So you have the Buddy Rices, Brian Herta's, Wayne Taylor, Ron Capp, I think Jamie McMurray, and a couple of the NASCAR guys, I think, Lake Speed. So we're going to have a celebrity race after that. So that'll be going on Thursday night.
The Sprint and Midget Classic on Friday night, that's right, going to top the whole thing off. Tell us a little bit about that race.
Well, one of the good things about coming to Florida is the fact that we can do some outside, venture out of the facility. Where in December in Indiana, you want to stay inside because going outside is not healthy. And I've always wanted to do a race in conjunction with the show, because I felt it was the right thing to do for all of the manufacturers and the people that are involved with racing. They could go into the pit area and they could meet with, you know, people that are actually using your products. And I thought it would be a nice blend to have our exhibitors and our attendees be able to go see a race. So we just didn't want to do a race. We wanted to do something spectacular. So we have Mopar as the title sponsor. We got DHL this year as a presenting sponsor. We got a great group of associate sponsors. We got the thing on TV. I just got confirmation today from Masters Entertainment that the race will run three times on the Outdoor Network. And we want to make a big deal out of it. We got the purse up fairly strong. I mean, to win the sprint car race, it's $10,000. To win the midget race, it's around $8,500. And if you can do both, we'll throw in another $50,000. So a driver,
open wheel modified,
a driver can win some money. We got, you know, a sponsor, J.E. Pistons, is sponsoring the Last to First Passing Award. I got Klotz Oil sponsoring, you know, Quick Time Award. So we got a lot of money. I mean, Quick Time in a midget is $1,500. So if you just add all this stuff up, a driver, if he has a decent evening, he can come out of there with $8,000 or $10,000 real easy.
Awesome, man.
Wow.
Dave Steele can come out of there with $8,000 or $10,000 real easy.
Now, Dave, I think he's already planning on it. He might have already. He's
sure
thinking,
he
he's
is.
Planning on going to the show with his newfound form of cash and making some purchases. He just had a big night. I don't know if you know about that. He just had a big night on Thursday in Phoenix. Did you know about that?
Phoenix,
No, I didn't. No, I didn't
hear about that.
We raced. He took his little hiatus and he took some time off to get his store going. And then he made his return Thursday night at Phoenix International Raceway there in conjunction with the next tele event. We ran the midgets there on Thursday night. And he started seventh and took the lead on about the 20th lap and won the race.
You know, he is amazing. We get to see him in Florida.
Unbelievable.
On asphalt with the TBARAs several times a year. And there's nothing like watching Dave Steele weave through those cars. It's amazing because he usually wins.
Well, and I was going to say, he might have took time off from racing around where you know, but he's right here at our local track, DeSoto Super Speedway, and he just put on one of the best shows I've seen in a while here recently. Just made some.
Unbelievable.
He makes
laps left together.
Them guys lift, and he's 3 days from lifting. Yep. I mean, he made a move for the lead going into one. It's just unbelievable. I mean, anybody else would have wrecked. Dave Steele cleared it. Didn't never touch anybody and drove off.
Yep, he's good at what he does, and we enjoy having him involved with our programs. And
absolutely.
I really like Dave because he's a little bit of a character.
Yeah, he is.
And that makes for a good show.
Steve, you mentioned now that you sort of got involved with the motorsports aspect of it because you were a hobby racer, a part-time racer yourself,
yep.
Involved in motorsports. What do you race?
We have those. We race midgets, and that's what Dave races on our team. And we race the midgets on the USAC circuit. And Dave's been our pavement specialist the last couple of years where he runs most of the pavement races for us.
Gotcha.
So, Steve.
Go ahead.
Tell us about the twins.
Woo, the twins.
We're going to debut new twins.
New twins.
We're having new twins.
Wrigley's, double mint twins.
This whole twin thing came about. We came up with this idea. We promoted some races a number of years ago called the Twin 25s. We did them at IRP in Irwindale. And I felt if you have a Twin 25 race, that's two 25-lap features instead of one 50-lap. You need to have twin trophy girls and twin this and twin that.
Oh, my God. You're the God.
So wherever we go, we have the twins, and they're going to be our ambassadors and spreading goodwill.
Well, they're scrolling through the pictures on the Sprint and Midget website right now,
oh my
Steve.
God.
So you've definitely got their attention. They're not listening to you, trust me.
That's all right. That's the purpose of all
that. That's the purpose of all that.
They are the twins.
Racing God. I found him. His name is Steve.
That's awesome. And a few years ago they had those the guys who broadcasted live, now they're on TV. They're out.
Oh, the Speed Freaks?
Speed Freaks out in California. Yeah. Yeah.
They were at the show in the Mopar booth. I think the last couple of years. They're not going to be there this year.
Gotcha.
They're good guys, and they have a fun approach to what they do, and I don't know. They're not, I know that I do not believe that they're going to be broadcasting from the Mopar stage this time.
Gotcha. But that's cool. Is there anything that we didn't ask? I mean, this is
if you're going to go to Orlando Speed World on Friday night, December 7th, you got to have a ticket. And I got a secret way of a way to do this. You can call this number here. It's 949.
He goes for on air, right?
This is what you do here. 949-499-5413 and ask for Nicole. And she'll
that was really quick, Steve.
She'll fix you up for tickets. Now, Nicole also knows the names of the twins and knows the background because she's our twin sorcerer. We give Nicole the project to find twins.
How about their number?
So anybody that wants to know the inside of the twins, not only can you buy a ticket from Nicole.
And find the inside out of the twins.
You can find out all about the twins.
Okay.
Does Nicole have the twins' phone number?
I think.
Well, because
if you buy enough tickets, you might be able to do.
Dave Steele's going to be the only one to get his picture taken with him, so
Dave
I'm just wondering how else
very
we can.
Clever, because he kind of is. He's also clever, and I'm going to say a little bit sneaky, because I think our first set of twins, there might have been some. How do I say this?
find the right
might
word.
Have some stories to tell there.
Okay.
Wow,
okay.
Perfect.
We're making notes. We will definitely be talking with Dave here.
Yeah, ask him.
I know he just sold four tickets, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
That's very cool. All right, Steve. Maybe we could get with you one more time before the big event. And
we're here to help. Yeah, I've enjoyed being on with you guys, and we're excited about coming to Florida, and will call in.
All right. It's definitely a fun show, and it's a full-day adventure, that's for sure. And
it's awesome to see them here in Orlando, too, for the change.
And the race. So we'll talk to you again soon, Steve, and okay. Thanks very much for
take care, you guys.
Taking the time to be with us. Okay.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
The Twins.
Yeah, the Twins.
Wow.
You guys, that was pretty cool. But, you know, I'll tell you, I mentioned that about the keys. You don't want to lose your keys. Bill Green and I went there 2 years ago. We go out to the parking lot after we've been there all day walking around this place that is just unbelievably huge. And he's looking for his keys, and he's lost them. And we walked back to the building, and I walked back in, and I said, Bill, there is no way on hell we're going to find these keys in this place. This is, I mean.
Yeah, I went there last year. It's
like 20, you've been there, 25 malls in one space, you know.
It's unbelievable what they fit in there, actually. Yeah.
Are we going to talk to Sean?
So what, did Bill Green ever find the keys? Or
no, actually what we did is he had to go call a rent-a-car. We drove the rent-a-car home. He dropped me off, and then he went back and did something and got his...
figured it all out, yeah. That's right up Bill Green's alley.
We're going to talk to Bill. You can ask him.
You can ask Bill.
I get on Bill.
We're going to come back real quick with Sean...
Rudiman.
Sean Rudiman.
All right.
Yeah.
Take us to a break real quick.
They have a classic...
The Golf Classic.
A Golf Classic.
Right.
We'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet Inventor.
Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet Inventor.
You've given us the real American dream. A tray, 15 feet of food, and a little sign that says, Go nuts, buddy.
Well, pinch me, I'm dreaming.
Pushing side dish innovation to its limits, you offer creamed everything and 400 flavors of gelatin.
Feed it frenzy.
If there's beef, you'll chip it. If there's chicken, you'll fry it. And if there's gravy, well, then everything's going to be okay.
Thank God for the gravy.
So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, buffet boy. You know the way to a man's heart and a few hundred tasty ways to challenge it.
Mr. All-You-Can-Eat Buffet.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, Fort Collins, Colorado.
Do you need to raise your land and business to new heights? Then you need to call Evergreen Development and Construction. They do it all, from land development, construction, drainage, excavating, site prep, and even environmental projects. No job is too big for Evergreen Development and Construction. Give them a call at 813-478-8847. And don't forget to check out the late model Evergreen Development Construction Race Team. They'll be at a track near you. And remember, just think green. Evergreen Development and Construction, 813-478-8847.
When purchasing a technical product like brakes, there is no substitute for quality and experience. In the performance industry, no one has more experience than the brakeman. The brakeman has been designing high-performance solutions for a variety of applications for almost 40 years. The current products from the brakeman are among the most advanced on the market. The Tornado calipers are the only calipers in the performance industry to carry a U.S. patent number and a new line of pads and rotors. The Brakeman Super Brakes are solving brake problems on hard-use vehicles, from police cars to ambulances and a variety of fleet vehicles. So if you're towing a trailer, carrying heavy loads, or just plain want to extend the life and stopping power of your vehicle, it's time to call the Brakeman on the web at thebrakeman.com.
With us right now, he is the spotter for David Rudiman. It's Sean Rudiman. Sean, how you doing tonight, brother?
Good, guys. How y'all doing?
Hey, Sean, I appreciate your patience, man. I know we tried doing this about a month ago, a little bit of problems here and there, but we got you on, brother.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. You know, got a lot of good things going on. You know, just get through this year. You know, we had a lot of bad things with blowing motors and stuff, so we'll get through here and look forward to next year.
Yeah, but y'all had a big one, that Memphis race.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. You know, that was, we needed that because, you know, we we were really up and going good there at Atlanta and practiced, and then failed to make the show, which was really a big stunner to all of us. And, you know, we flew to Memphis that day, and sitting next to David there on the plane, he didn't say a whole word until we got there, and I could tell he was kind of man on a mission that day, you know. Even from the first lap of qualifying until the checker flag, he was determined to win that race one way or the other. So it was a lot of fun. Uncle Buzz was with us, so, you know, it was pretty cool.
Now, Sean, being the spotter for David, I bet you've got to meet a lot of interesting people.
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, a lot of good people. Like, met some, you know, got to meet some of the guys from the TV show Prison Break, that Finchner, he's one of the actors there. He's a real big David Rubin fan, which is pretty cool, you know, to be walking through a pit and here you got a actor hollering at David and just walking over and talking to him, you know. But they're all normal people. Jimmy Johnson, the spotter, is Stevie Reeves, used to be a former USAC sprint car guy. And like I told him, I used to be one of my favorite drivers as a kid, and now I stand next to him every week spotting him. So there's a lot of good people, a lot of people that, you know, all these drivers are just like everybody else. They put their pants on the same way. They just have to stop and sign autographs, you know, a little more than everybody else.
Well, you know, I mean, all of us down here, we watch David race, you know, all over the place, on dirt, on asphalt and everything, you know, so we're pretty familiar with him. A lot of, you know, everybody got to talk to him and stuff. But I go to the website, davidrudiman.com, and I mean, this dude's got some serious fan base.
Yeah, our David Rudiman fans are pretty tough. You know, they love David to death. They're not scared to say what they want to say, but he has a very loyal fan base. You know, there's about 20 there that are dedicated to David and David only, which is pretty cool, you know.
Now, tell us a little bit about, you know, there was a few questions there towards the end of the season about where David was going. A lot of people looking at him. How did he finally make that decision?
I know, you know, the deal at RCR at Richard Childress Racing, I just don't think they could come up with a sponsor in time. The deal with Michael's there, they were trying to get a sponsor. You know, Michael and them were working hard to get him re-signed. When the deal come about with DJ deciding he was going to retire after five races next year, you know, DJ handpicked David to replace him. And I thought that was really cool. And he went to UPS and said, look, you know, I want to back down from racing and, you know, only run about five. And they asked DJ, well, who should we put in the car? What should we do? And DJ told him, you know, his first words out of his mouth was, David Rudiman, that's who needs to replace me. So that was really cool. And I think that was one of the biggest turning points is to David's decision to have DJ come to him and say, you know, I want you to replace me in the UPS car. And for Aaron stepped in on the Busch side and said they would sponsor the car as long as David was in the seat. So, you know, he's got, in the little time that he's been there, he's done such a phenomenal job that these sponsors love him and, you know, are willing to say, hey, this is our driver that goes with us or we don't come back, you know. And then for Dale Jarrett, you know, Daytona 500 NASCAR champion, to stand up and say David Rubin needs to be the one to replace me, I just thought that was just really cool.
That is awesome. You know, and the other thing about this, you know, with David getting a big name for himself and stuff, and with Dale Jarrett, you know, handpicking him and everything, he also gets to do a lot of charity stuff, and you got some big charity stuff coming up.
Yeah, we've got Thanksgiving weekend, the 23rd and 24th. We started this 2 years ago, myself and Buddy and Brantley Smith, who are our cousins who are on the golf course here, and we do a golf tournament for All Children's Hospital. All the money goes to them. Well, this year we kind of done a little different. On Friday night, we're going to do a dinner, starting like a happy hour at 5:30 with dinner to follow and a live auction. And just some of the items I've got for the auction is just is outrageous. I mean, Tony Stewart gave us his uniform he wore at Loudon, New Hampshire, and he's autographed it. Dale Jarrett gave me a helmet and autographed it. Daryl Waltrip gave me a helmet. I've got one of David's helmets. A couple of David's fire suits we're auctioning off. We have... we've got a fire suit from Bill Elliott. We've got tickets to the Daytona races. Memphis Speedway stepped up and gave us tickets, and St. Louis has gave us tickets. We've got a ride-along program from Dale Jarrett Motorsports where you can go and drive the cars. I mean, I have stuff coming daily. I've got sheet metal. I got my dad's garage full of sheet metal. Juan Pablo gave us a hood. I've got Dale Jr. gave us the bumper cover off his Bush car that he autographed. And just sheet metal from all of Michael Waltrip cars. And just stuff coming in daily. And what we'll do is we'll have the live auction. And Bobby Dixon, one of our local favorites here at East Bay, a good friend of our family's, he's gonna do the live auction for us because he used to be an auctioneer on the side. And it's going to be a lot of fun. That's going to be on the 23rd, Friday night. The auction will probably start about 7. It's open to the public, $15. We've got a catered dinner from Sonny's Barbecue. They're giving us all the food for free. And we'll have a live band after that, probably till the wee hours of the morning. Then we'll get back up Saturday morning and come in and play a little golf at 11 o'clock and just build those two together and see how much we can raise for all children.
Wow, that is absolutely awesome, Sean. You know, with David putting this on and, you know, the people in NASCAR taking a look at us down here in Florida, all us Florida bumpkins down here, David doing this great thing, all that stuff coming in for the auction. I mean, this is just a collector's dream to be at that auction.
Yeah, I mean, I got Jeff Garcia's gave us a jersey. I've got two Lightning jerseys. Danny Werfel, he's gave us a jersey. The Buccaneers have gave us a couple balls. Football signed. I've got some baseballs from the Devil Rays. So a lot of people stepped up and gave us stuff. You know, it's really cool to see how big it's went. The first year we threw it together in 2 weeks and we raised $10,000. And then last year we did it in a month. We raised $25,000. And right now I started 6 months early and Toyota's going to give us $7,500 just to start. And Aaron's going to match, you know, give us $5,000 to go on top of that. So we're already pretty much where we were ended last year already this year. So we're looking to raise about $50,000. And what's cool about it is everybody that comes to this is working people 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. So our charity is the working man comes in there and gives their money out of their pocket. So that's what's really cool about it.
Sean, let me take you back. Do you remember that weekend when the Waltrips came down and made the big announcement up at the Ruderman Racing? It's got to seem like, for you personally, it's got to seem like three lifetimes ago, huh?
Yeah, it's. I was just talking to my brother Greg there because I work for him Monday through Thursday at the body shop, riding Essence and stuff. And I'm like, you know, the years went by so quick. It's just, I can't fathom how fast it's gone by. It's like, I can't believe we're at Homestead already. But, yeah, I mean, the Waltrip family has always made us feel like family. Daryl has taken me aside and he's taught me a lot. You know, he's helped me with my spotting, you know, just different things he points out, and you learn a lot from him. He's been there and done that, you know. He can tell you stories, and you just learn from him being around. And, you know, he's always told us, don't beat yourself. And it's just amazing that they would come to Zephyr Hills last year and make that announcement and, you know, and pretty much put us part of the family. Michael took me and David out to dinner this year when we were in Pocono, Pennsylvania, just us three. And that was probably one of the coolest memories I'll ever have because Michael was just himself, and it was just so awesome to, you know, we flew to Montreal, Canada with him on his plane, and then we went out to eat, and it was just really neat to be part of that, you know, be hanging out with Michael Waltrip.
All right, Sean, we're getting close to being on top of it right now. More information about this, how do people get it?
They can go on to davidrudiman.com, rudimanracing.com, any of the DavidRuman.com has all the information about the golf tournament and the auction on there.
Well, Sean, we really appreciate you being on. We also appreciate all the help you did with the Ruderman Family Show that we had a few months back. That was a stellar show right there. We had a blast doing that. And we'll damn sure be talking to you again soon, brother.
Yeah, we're going to talk to you. We're working on some stuff right now for Wayne Jr., which we call Pookie. To look forward, I think you'll see David Ruderman on an ARCA team pretty quick here, and we're going to try to have Pookie in Daytona for the ARCA race. So.
Oh, way cool, man.
All right, when you get that set up, give me a call, man, and we'll announce it live over the air.
All right, buddy. Appreciate it, guys.
Talk to you soon, Sean.
Thanks a lot, Sean.
Thank you.
All right. Sean Ruderman, man. Wow, what a story.
That's good stuff.
Isn't that is good stuff, man. I mean, David Ruderman, to me, has always been, I mean, he's been that guy, you know, just likable. I mean, always, whenever you seen him anywhere, he always, you know, had easy a handout, yeah. Easy going, and put that helmet on, man. He was a hell of a race car driver. He still is. You know, and we talked to, when we had Bob Fuzzy and Wayne Sr. in down there at the Snook River Grill, they were telling us about, you know, because I was asking them, I said, why are they having so much trouble in the cup compared to the Bush? You know, because the Bush, he said, because everything is experimental right now in the cup. I mean, they're pushing the edge on everything. Because, I mean, the Memphis race, he busted their asses in that Memphis race, you know. And it was well deserved. I mean, and it's great to see somebody like David Ruderman getting that break. Yep, no doubt about it. And this charity thing that they got going, man, they already got $15,000.
I know. And then I was just listening to him say all the things that they got coming and the people that they gave them stuff. And I mean, that's just unbelievable. I mean, the stuff, the people that back it and help it, and that's just going to bring that many more people to the show, you know, to the auction. And it's going to be a big weekend for them guys.
Go up there and get that Tony Stewart.
Yeah. It's funny because while you're on it, I was over here looking at DeSoto's schedule because I was going to run the last night there, and that's a Friday night deal there that they're having that auction. So I might see what I got going on. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, see you popping out on the winner's circle with a Tony Stewart fire suit.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I'll
put that hair on little Johnny War Saturday.
Start climbing the fence.
You know, Rick, for hardcore, you know, Florida race fans. There ain't no better story, man. It's just...
No doubt.
It is unbelievable.
No doubt. I mean...
We are going to switch gears here now, and we're going to go do some sprint car stuff with Larry Sams from the ASCS and Bill Green, Tampa Tribune.
Our best.
Hey, man, you guys are on Real Racing USA Live.
Hey, thanks for having us. I know Larry made the trip. Larry, how was the trip home from East Bay?
Oh, it's always long going home. It's the shortcuts going to the racetrack. The long term's going home after the race.
I know these guys have gone through a lot of stuff tonight. In fact, I've been roasted twice, I heard already. So try not to let them do too much talking or I'll get beat up about them damn keys again.
But, we already brought that up, and you do know that because that means you were listening.
Yeah, either that or they'll be wanting a twin phone number again.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely.
Listen, Larry, though, it was an awesome, awesome weekend, but, man, Kenny Adams just once again stepped in and kind of, like, swept the table, took all the big cash, and showed how it gets done. But he was challenged both nights, first night by Greg Leonard in an older model car that really came on strong, and then Matt Tiffany has really done his homework this year, and he was all over him on Saturday night.
It's amazing to see these young guys and how much they've learned over the years, but Matt, he's phenomenal. He's going to be one of the greats in sprint car racing.
And if I remember correctly, Larry, Greg Leonard is one of the kids that Kenny Adams kind of took under his wing or helped out every time he was there at the track. They were parked next to each other. They were working on chassis together and kind of showed him the ropes.
Right. Well, there's a lot of those kids like that Kenny's helped, and Red Stauffer that works with Kenny's helped too. Those older, more experienced drivers have taught T.J. Weingartner and Matt Tiffany and Stephen Darvalix, a lot of those guys that are coming in now, the tricks of the trade.
Well, we've seen those guys do a lot of great racing, and we know Kenny Adams can always come to the top of the cream of the crop here. Tell us about the ASDS Rebel Region. First year out, I think you got in 14 races total. This year, you're looking for a whole lot more next year. What's the future of the Rebel Region?
Well, we got 13 in this year, and when I got home Monday morning, the phone was ringing off the hook. We had tracks that booked races with us this year that want four races with us next year, and it's going to be a good year. I can see that already. We're looking at probably 22 to 25 races for the 2008 season.
Well, I know the guys probably got a couple of questions. Rick, you guys think of something you wanted to ask Larry? Because I know the Rebel Region came on strong as a dirt group of racers and seemed to really pick it up near the end of the year, really putting the pressure on guys like, of course, old Pete Walton and the USCS and some of the other Florida Sprint Car Associations have been running the limited programs down here in the dirt.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and they've got the top names in the sport in the South, especially down here with Kenny Adams, Gary Wright, and all that. Now, let me ask you this. Last night we had Mike Peters on our other show, Inside Florida Racing. Ocala going to dirt. Have you talked that?
Yes, sir. We're talking about doing several races there next year. Mike and I talked yesterday morning about it. I chatted with him about the fact that they announced it to their crowd Saturday night and the reaction he got. So we're planning on booking dates there for next year.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome because of, with Ocala going dirt and the ASCS, you know, I mean, you guys are basically really on a roll right now. The popularity that's picked up down here in the South with the Rebel Region is an awesome thing.
Well, we've got good people working with us, and we got good racers, and you can't beat the two. Both of them together, just we're going to go places.
Now, what's your schedule like for the Winter Nationals?
Well, that'll be the national event for the ASCS, which will kick off at East Bay on the 30th of January and run the 30th, 31st, and the 1st of February for the 360 Nationals there.
Yeah, the ASCS will be the sanctioning body for East Bay's 360 Nationals this year. And if you notice, if you look at the Winter National program that's been laid out so far, the 410s are taking a little backseat to the 360s this year. They got three nights of 360s, but only two nights of 410s.
Right.
I've gotten a good explanation of why that dropped back so bad.
I don't know, but I do remember that when Stan Cohen owned the racetrack, that he always told me that the 360s are the show. I mean, these guys, the competition is much closer in the 360s than the 410s.
The 410s are so expensive to build and to operate, and it's just much more expensive to do that, even on a regional basis, and there's just not enough of them to really make for a good show in a regional event. They have to be a national event, and there has to be a lot more cost when they are a national event. So the 360 racing, to me, is the ideal racing. The last month or so, we went to the Devil's Bowl and the ASCS Winter Nationals out there and the Westmar Challenge out there, and saw some of the best racing we've ever seen in sprint car racing, and then topped that off with the Short Track Nationals at I-30. And for 360 racing, you'll never see anything any better than the 360s at I-30 and at East Bay and the Winter Nationals. Those two are just phenomenal 360 racing.
No doubt about it.
But the only thing I'm sad about, and Jack will vouch for me here, is that the 410 Nationals were the original Nationals that came to East Bay in the very first years. So it's the long history. It's the 27th or 28th year the 410s would have run, and it's the 360s didn't come along until about two or three years after that. But I'm sure it'll hold the tradition, as traditions are. Winter Nationals are still Winter Nationals. There's a lot of folks coming down up north, and it's some great racing no matter which class is out there.
Now, how many different regions are there in the ASCS?
Right now, I think there's 13 there. There's another one coming on in the southwest. They ran a non-winged region last year, and they're going to have a winged division that runs in the Manzanita area this year. At least that one, and yeah, maybe more.
Yeah, I'm looking at now Sooner Gulf South. Now, how did the Rebel region come about?
Well, we got to looking at what was going on with everything else, and there was a void in the Florida, Georgia, Alabama area. So I called Emmett and we chatted about it, decided that it would be a good thing to do. So I put a team together and we agreed to try it and see how it worked. I told Emmett if it wasn't fun, we wouldn't do it, but if it were fun, I'd really enjoy doing it. So I've had more fun this year than I've ever had in my life. I just wish we'd have done this 20 years ago.
There you go.
When I was young.
Hey, now, Bill, you've been involved in a lot of sprint car racing. You tried your own series there for a little while. You worked with USCS. You saw the car count kind of go down. How do you compare this with the way the ASCS is doing it?
Well, the ASCS is doing it right, I guess, because they've got a package for a motor and a chassis that people can afford to still get a hold of. You can afford to travel to those races and still you'll come back home with the money if you can finish well. It's just one of those deals where they've hit it right on the nose and they're not, you know, too expensive for the tracks not to have them. And they bring enough fans to watch these lightning fast sprints to make up
you know, a great, great weekend of racing. On top of the fact that if you've been there and seen them, you watch 410s race at East Bay for three nights and you watch 360s race at East Bay for three nights, who was going faster? You can't hardly tell the difference. So nobody really knows the difference. So running the more less expensive machines is probably going to be the way to go to keep the car counts up. Now, of course, everybody wants to get into a 410 and go run the World of Outlaws, but, of course, that's cubic dollar at work there, much more than it is a lot of the other things that go on behind the scenes.
Yeah, with our spec engines, our spec cylinder heads on our engines, it keeps the cost down for the racer and therefore keeps the cost down for the promoter, and it makes it work to where he can have one of our shows and make money on it, and that's the bottom line. He's got to make money to stay in business, and we've structured these regions to where the racer can get out there and he doesn't have to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on fuel to get to a racetrack, and he can know that he's going to be within a 3-hour, 4-hour drive of where his base is, and make it work for him.
How do you compare your 360 sprint car price-wise compared to a 410 World of Outlaws?
Oh, way, way, way cheaper. Way, 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 way cheaper. The engines themselves, the best 360 engines you can get are about $30,000. The 410 engines, they're probably $55,000. There's almost double the price. And the cost of traveling with a 410 show, there's not a good regional 410 show. It's got to be national to make it work. And when you're crossing the country back and forth, the traveling cost is just unbelievable.
What about pulling the 410 motor out, the basic car itself?
Same car.
Same exact car.
Right.
Yeah, almost exactly the same. There's a few different regions that use different brake calipers and things that might get a little more expensive, but he's pretty close. I would have thought that $45,000, $50,000 for a good 360 program and $85,000 to $100,000 for a good, you know, World of Outlaws car. That's just one car, and you got to have about three or four of them if you're going to do it right.
Well, the Westmar engine that Gary Wright won out at the Westmar Challenge, they valued it at $32,000. And he sold it at the Short Track Nationals. One of the guys blew their motor out there, and he had that motor in his truck. And he sold them the motor for $32,000 at the racetrack.
Imagine that.
Put it in that night and raced it.
Well, Larry, what's the plans for 2008 for the ASCS Rebel Region?
Yeah, we understand there's some big plans in the works for next year.
Yes, sir. We're going to concentrate more on the Florida area than we have this year. We're looking at 22 to 25 races. It's going to get bigger and better.
With the races you'll pick up in Ocala, the ones you'll run at East Bay at both ends of the season, I guess, again, opening up and finishing the season here again, I hope.
Right.
Will you run more at East Bay in the middle of the year at any time? Will you run more at North Florida Speedway or any of the others, like I think Southern Speedway or Henry County and some of those other tracks that have dirt on them?
We're talking to all the dirt tracks. We're talking to Volusia, East Bay during the middle of the year, the Ocala track. Like I say, he's already talked to us about several dates there. We talked to Volusia yesterday about several dates with Volusia, so we're planning on being in the Florida area quite a bit this year. And in the South Georgia area, the Oglethorpes, the Swainsboro, Golden Isles, Waycross, that area too.
That's cool.
Guys won't have to haul quite as far.
Yeah.
Right, and we've talked to a lot of them out in the Panhandle. We'll be doing some Panhandle racing too. We did some this past year. We were at Locks a couple of times and at Milton, and there's another track over there that we're working to try to put one together with. Or more with in the Panhandle. So we're going to be in Florida quite a bit more than we were this past year.
Yep.
My last question for you before I let these guys finish up with you, Larry, would be I want you to explain why is it that we don't see more sprint car racing on asphalt as much as we do dirt? You can get the TBRA, great show, everything, but there's no stepping stone, no limited sprint or a smaller version of a sprint to do that on asphalt across the South. Is there a reason that that's being kept back, and is it just the cost and expense of running it?
Well, no, not really. We've agreed to take over the Southern Tour in North and South Carolina, too, and they made some inroads this past year into doing some asphalt racing, and we'll be doing some more this year. The cars are specialty cars on asphalt. We're trying to keep that from happening. We're trying to run dirt cars with very, very simple changes to it to make it a dirt car, make it an asphalt car. But they have to be much stronger on asphalt than they are on dirt. The front ends can't, they don't dance as much. They're on the pavement more, and they, when they hit the wall, they hurt a whole lot more. Now, the wheels and all on a dirt car are real, real thin aluminum. When they hit a wall, they bend quite a bit. So on asphalt, they have to be much, much stronger. And the cost of doing that runs the cost up to the racer. So
all right.
You're going to start seeing some of it. But then again, it's not as exciting as the dirt. The dirt is much more exciting with a sprint car. And there's much better racing on dirt than there is on asphalt because there's not as much passing going on the asphalt as there is on the dirt.
Yeah, the only way you convince people is they got to go see some dirt racing to make that, we got to get them to make that jump.
It's nice not to have to go to the car wash when you get done at the asphalt race.
Right.
But I tell you what, there's nothing in the world as exciting as a dirt race. Nothing.
Yeah.
They can say what they want to about all the other sports. The only sport that is as exciting, the only one that even comes close is probably bull riding. Tell me that driving one of these sprint cars is pretty close to bull riding.
And the only other big news out of Saturday night at East Bay Raceway Park, guys, was the bad boy of East Bay, Gene Lasker, locked up the limited sprint title and managed to scare the guys in the winner's circle as he did donuts across the front stretch and into the go-kart track.
So. Well, now, Kenny Adams did his donuts on the back straightaway Saturday night. And somebody asked Kenny, he said, why did you stop? Because he did about 8 or 10 of them. And somebody said, why'd you stop? He said, I got so dizzy, I didn't know what I was doing. He said, I didn't know where I was. He said the first donut he did, the car kind of acted like it wanted to get up and go over, and said he almost thought he'd done the wrong thing by trying to do those donuts. But he did about 8 or 10 of them back there.
All right. Very cool. Larry, we want to get back with you here sometime either in December or at least no later than January and see what the latest is. With the series, and I'm beginning more and more to agree with you about the dirt thing. For me personally, it's just a personal thing, but it is a lot of fun.
Hey, folks, they owe it to themselves to go watch a dirt race with sprint cars. There's just nothing in the world like it, and we really appreciate you guys putting us on.
Well, cool, no problem, man.
We appreciate all the fans coming out to watch us. Watch us do our thing.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, we before you go, Bill, in case you didn't hear, there's a new new business in the Tampa area that what's the name of that business?
Jefferson Irwin Racing.
You heard of them, Bill?
Yeah, I heard him talking about it. Anything that Wayne gets into, I'm sure will do well because, I mean, if it ain't done right the first time, he don't do it that way. So I know that they'll have some great clientele coming out of there talking about winning races or doing whatever things they're going to be really getting into. Who knows?
We're going to get the Twins to propound it.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the plug there, Bill Green.
That's no doubt, man. No doubt.
All right.
Appreciate it.
We'll talk to you guys later.
And you can imagine when you put the name Dave Steele on some kind of motorsports program that'll be doing business, you may have some competition. Who knows?
We'll talk to you later, guys.
All right. Bye, guys.
See you, Larry.
Thank you.
All right, guys.
Real Racing USA live on Tuesday night.
Always live.
Yeah, get some. We got to talk to now tomorrow night on Real Racing USA. On Wednesday nights we have the ASA, the O'Reilly ASA
late model,
right?
Fast lane deal.
Last week you had Jeff Choquette on. That was a great interview.
Wasn't he cool? Yeah. That was very cool. And the drag racing with Stevie LaTemp, staging Stevie LaTemp, straight lining with Stevie Wednesday night. We're not going to go to break. I want you to get the final word from the guys over here with the new business.
The final word?
Yeah. While what we're going to do is, I'm going to make a call out to Texas and see if I can scrape up some.
Oh, not another Texas interview. All right, the final word. You heard him. Give me the final word.
Well, the final word is for any of your racing needs, whether it be setup help, parts help, anything like that, technical support, machine work, engine work, any technical questions when it comes to that, give us a call. Jefferson Irwin Racing, 572-5097.
Area code 727.
Area code 727.
And where are you located?
Clearwater, Florida. 49th Street and 112th.
Just north of Quaker Steak and Lube on the opposite side of the road.
I know where that is.
Yeah, yep. We're right down. I mean, we can see Quaker Steak from standing out our front door there. So
probably some of the best wings in all of Pinellas Park.
Absolutely. Got the little bike nights and their hot rod nights. And, you know, we're sitting on a six-lane highway there. We got a little showroom. So it's a small place we're getting started at. But hopefully we can turn it into something that everybody will know.
Full-service machine shop, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Sir. All right. Cool deal.
We'll be proving our horsepower next year in the open wheel modified class.
All right, brother. Well, like you haven't been doing it for the last 3 years.
Yeah, well, I know, but it ain't been our motors.
Right.
Hang in there. Don't go anywhere. That wasn't really the last word.
Per Jack Smith.
Steve. I got Stevie LaTemp on my brain still. Rick.
Yes.
There is a man who lives in Texas.
There's probably a few men that live in Texas.
Who every time there's a big sprint car race, like limited sprints and whatnot, at East Bay Raceway, he comes all the way over to East Bay to race.
Really?
Yeah. Let me see. Clint Reynolds, welcome to Real Racing USA Live.
Thanks. Good to be on the show.
So now tell us the real story. Do you really get on a plane, fly to Tampa, Florida, drive down to East Bay and race and then go home?
Absolutely. Every time.
That's awesome. That's real awesome. I love that. I mean, what, they don't have sprint car racing in Texas?
Actually, they do. You know how many times I get asked that one and say with a perplexed look on their face? You know what? It's actually a whole lot easier for me just to fly to Tampa and race down there. They got a great program. Than it is to go to, say, like a Devil's Bowl or one of the other tracks in Texas. I mean, you know, the gas prices nowadays, just to get there would cost me more money than to fly.
Yeah, we just heard that earlier about a guy that was flying. It was a lot cheaper than the gas. But how'd you learn about East Bay and everything that goes on down here in Florida?
Actually, believe it or not, I grew up in Florida watching sprint cars at not only East Bay, but the old Florida Fairgrounds. And my love for sprint car racing just grew from a little boy. I mean, and my dad used to take me to the races, and I just knew one day I would do it. And unfortunately, I had to move away before I even got a sprint car. And what I decided to do is I said, you know what, this is, I love East Bay, I love the fans there. I don't know if you've been to other tracks, but they got some of the most exciting or excitable fans that you can possibly imagine. I mean, they either root for you or they boo for you, but no matter what they're doing, they're excited about it. And just the action there at East Bay, it's one of the raciest little tracks I've seen. And I decided I'm going to build a limited sprint and come back and race exclusively there. So that's what I do. I fly back and forth every time. And let me tell you, it's a tough schedule.
Now, you got the sprint car here?
Yeah, actually, it's here. My dad still lives in Florida. So what we do is if the car needs to be worked on and set up and prepared, I fly in, we work on the car together, and we just tow it up from my dad's house.
Do you have, where do you live in Texas?
San Antonio.
San Antonio. So, you know anything about tides?
About tides? No.
Have you figured out the tides at East Bay yet?
You know, I haven't actually, but I've heard a little bit about it.
Well, hey, you know, we know a guy there named Rick Day there that was out in San Antonio, wasn't he not, running in San Antonio Speedway, or I'm not sure what the name of it was, but he's from down here, and I raced for him here in the Open Wheel Modified Series before the Sarah Series, and you know Rick Day?
No, actually, I don't.
He was the general manager out there at the asphalt track in San Antonio before it closed, and it's not unusual to find him working at East Bay.
Oh, really?
Right, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Especially
he's all
he'll
over
be here in the Nationals.
Yeah, he's all over the state of Florida. He's been one of the better kind of promoters for series and deals here down here in Florida.
Wow.
Now, how many times a year do you figure you fly back and forth?
You know what? This is my first full season on it, and I would say this year I probably went down around 10, 11 times. But, you know, it's real hard because more than anything, I got a flight expense every time, and I'm always checking the weather. I mean, if it's, 50% chance or less, I take a shot and go for it. If it's a little bit more than that, I'll talk to my dad. I have my bags packed. I'm at the airport, and I make last-minute decisions because if it's a race that's going to be rained out or guaranteed rain, not guaranteed, but, in Florida it rains all the time.
Well, that's a guarantee in Florida, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but so what I do is if it's like 70, 80% chance of rain, then I just can't afford to fly, so I hold off. Even what got me is 2 weeks ago even, I believe it was one of the last races in October, they were calling for this big front. It was going to just saturate Florida the whole weekend, and so I decided last minute, don't go. And turns out they raced that night.
Yeah. That's our great weatherman.
Yeah,
I know that sounds like a tough deal there, just fighting the weather in this state for sure. For us, even just being 45 minutes or an hour away from a track is a big expense that we end up running around chasing the rain all day. So I can only imagine trying to connect flights and make it a whole weekend deal.
July, August, and September is a real rough time, especially August. September is rough time for promoters in Florida.
Right.
How's that deal work out there? I mean, as far as the weather, you guys get it, part of your racing season that kind of gets shortened due to weather instances, or?
Yeah, just not as much as Florida. I mean, Florida is just, it's just like a rain belt. I mean, that it's going to always rain in Florida. Yeah. From, 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, you're guaranteed to get rain. Here it's a little different. When it decides to rain, it rains, and it lets you know it's going to rain days in advance.
Prepare.
One minute is blue skies, the next minute it's thunderstorms. And it only takes, as just about a 15-20-minute shower to
ruin a day.
Dirt track.
Yep.
Clint, what's your car number?
It's the 07 in a limited sprint.
Gotcha, okay. Do you have a website?
Not up currently, but I'm trying to put one together to help, get sponsors and things like that.
Cool.
As you know, it's a rather expensive proposition to even get into racing, and to have to keep flying out. It's even more, more expensive.
Nice.
I even have went as far as I needed a new tire, right rear, because I changed the tires on us this year for the limited sprint, and I ran just about that same tire, the right rear tire, almost all season, and I couldn't even afford to. Get a new tire, so the guys at work chipped in and bought me a new right rear tire. It was kind of a fun deal.
Oh, that's awesome.
They're rooting for me, so
it's always good to have good friends like that, sponsors like that. Yeah.
So when will it be the next time you'll be back at the Clay on the Bay?
Well, to be honest with you, it probably won't be until the next racing season for the Limited Sprints Open. I'm going to try and get back for the Winter Nationals, but I doubt I'll be able to with the work schedule. It's hard enough to get off work for the regular season, and then the Winter Nationals being as big a deal as it is down there, taking off consecutive days like that will be kind of hard. So
yeah, well, in 2007, you found a whole new game to play. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
The Texas to Florida Express.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to appreciate the effort right there. I mean, that's just an awesome, that's the dedication and the passion like we talked about before.
Some serious passion right there. Passion for the sport.
All right, Clint Reynolds.
For that.
Clint, thanks a lot for spending some time with us on Real Racing USA, man.
Not a problem, man. Great to have me here.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Well,
imagine that. Jump on a plane, get in your sprint car.
Limited sprint car.
What's the name of that business, and what's the phone number?
Well, I've decided tonight's Real Racing USA, brought to you by
.
Jefferson Irwin Racing, Clearwater, Florida, 727 572-5097. Give us a call. We'll take care of all your needs.
And I know you don't like that ugly message board, but you need to get your wife to post it on there.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, you know, I ain't even hardly played on that new message board, so.
He don't like the new message board, yeah.
Carnac.com, son.
Real Racing USA's message board will... Yeah, people get used to it.
So we got lined up for next week, brother?
Notice we got new music on the leave-in. Leave out.
Yeah. New old music.
All new music.
CCMP.
Oh, yeah, we're not doing a...
Yeah, how about that?
No take it to the limit, huh?
we're gonna keep on believing, man.
Stop thinking about tomorrow.
Just gotta keep believing.
That's right.
Just gotta keep believing.
And, before we do that, what was the question you asked me?
What do we got lined up for next week?
Next week we have Dennis Huth.
If you don't get pneumonia.
Yes. Who is... man, this guy was... He was the guy who really... made the Craftsman Truck Series.
He invented the Craftsman Truck Series.
Yes, he invented it.
Yeah.
And he's going to be with us. And these days, of course, he is the guy who owns all the rights and everything else.
The logos.
Everything.
The name.
ASA. American Speed Association. He'll be with us next week. Plus all kinds of other nonsense. You never know.
Never know what we're going to do.
We could be back.
What's the name of that business? What's the name of that business?
Jefferson Irwin could be back.
That's right. Jefferson Irwin Racing.
All right.
Only game in town, baby.
There you go, brother. FirstCarnac.com and Real Racing USA is concerned. Once again, Real Racing USA, another night in the books. We'll catch you next Tuesday night.
Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
And you're listening from...
Take two.
You just say the rest.
Take two.
This is Joe Irwin.
And this is Wayne Jefferson.
From Jefferson Irwin Racing.
And you're listening to Real Racing USA.